From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of December 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. Alan Parrish, the director of the Research and Education Centers here on campus, will discuss the variety trials and data that's been collected from the corn and soybeans grown and harvested there. And then as we close out the time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast, too. That with Mike Tenner from T-Storm Weather.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $5.76¾. That was up 5¼. The May at $5.79¼, 6¼ higher. And December futures at $5.49, up a half cent. January soybeans, $12.44¼, 16 higher. The March up 15 at $12.50. And November beans up 5¼ for next year at $12.19¼. Bean meal futures at $3.48.80, down 30 cents. The bean oil at $56.34, $1.16 higher. Soft red winter wheat up 24½ in the March at $8.15. The hard red at $8.38½, up 24¼ for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract 97½ cents higher. Feeders were a nickel lower, and lean hogs were up $1.87½ for the day. Crude oil for the day at $66.81 a barrel, $1.24 higher. Gasoline at $1.97⁄⁄ cents, up 2½ cents. And diesel fuel or heating oil, 3½ cents higher. That at $2.11⁄⁄ cents per barrel, or rather gallon. Gold futures at $1,766.60, down $17.70. And the Dow now at 34,710, up 708 points for a Thursday. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been taking place in Chicago since the Thanksgiving holiday. And I really, Matt, want to start back then. We talked about this yesterday with Alan Brugler just a bit, because that day after Thanksgiving usually is pretty light trade. The markets moved higher. They can be pushed. I'm wondering what you thought about that day and then how trade has ensued throughout this week.
Yeah, it's been an interesting last several days. For instance, last Friday, of course, you had the news that, you know, this new strain was coming in, you know, Omicron or whatever it is. And so, you know, the market was spooked. You saw crude oil on Friday down 10 bucks. You saw, you know, four-digit losses in the Dow. You know, interestingly, the dollar was dollars withstood all this fairly well. There's been times we've looked up and the dollar's actually been stronger. So this week it was very important to see how are markets going to react. You know, what are the markets going to do? And quite frankly, we've traded fairly good. I mean, today obviously makes everything look better, but this corn market has seemed a little more resilient. Heck, the corn market rallied last Friday. It's one of the only things that we saw rally. But, you know, the bean market looked to me like it was, about to, go under. I mean, it certainly got underneath support levels, still under some support levels, and doesn't look 100% healthy. But today definitely makes you feel a heck of a lot better about what's going on. I think a lot of it's got to do with, you know, a variety of things. But, for instance, a lot of talk about what's going on in Argentina, and, with it starting to look a little drier, first of all, but forecast being very dry. You know, and I think that in the grand scheme of things, it's got traders just a little nervous. Both corn and beans could be a little bit lighter down there. And if they are, then we're tight enough, and not only in the world, but in the U.S., that it could have a pretty solid price impact.
What are your expectations for tomorrow? And then for maybe if you just think about what producers ought to do through the end of the month, a lot of them are thinking about what they've got in the way of taxes to pay, I suppose, and how to handle that. So there, do you have tips or been thinking about what they should do, can do, and what the possibilities are going into the January delivery timeframe?
You know, I kind of feel like everyone gets lulled to sleep sometimes, whenever, whether you're low prices, high prices, but whenever we kind of hang out in a range-bound trade, I think it gives us the impression that we're going to stay here forever. And so a couple of things that really jump out to me, I mean, shoot, Todd, there was times just today whenever we actually saw an inverse from D's corn out to July. Right now, as of the close, it looks like you're going to have about a 2 cent carry. What does that tell you? It tells you that the market wants your corn. It wants it right now. What else is telling you that that they want your corn right now will basis, you know. And so, you know, right here in central Illinois, there was 30 over basis last week. It dropped back to 20, but then we're hearing about a 25 over basis again. And so, you know, yes, they're getting a fair amount of corn at the end user, but at the same time, I think some of your end users are very concerned about what's going to happen on out after the first of the year. So as a producer, don't throw cold water on big basis and a lack of carry in the market here in December just because you didn't want to sell any more corn. Depending on your tax situation and what the, you know, how you usually handle it, you can always collect in January, as some people do. The other thing is that we can't take too much for granted, whether it's corn or beans, after the first of the year. I'm not bearish, but one thing I know is that it's fact that corn's worth $6 in a lot of places right here in December. And you can say that you think it's going to be worth over $6 later on. I'm not so sure that I agree. So, and then the last thing would just be on your 22 stuff. I mean, 550 corn and 1220 beans historically are extremely good price levels. Yes, our input costs are a little bit higher. There's no doubt about it for corn. They're excessively higher. But at the same time, I don't want to have all my inputs locked in without at least locking in some corn, because these are still attractive price levels that we can pencil profit margins from.
Yeah. So on that, when you've talked to producers, and I've heard this more than once from producers, what are you going to do for next year? And this was, I mean, once the price of fertilizer had gone up, well, they were like, well, I think I'm going to maybe plant more corn because I don't think everybody else will do it. And I honestly looked at him and said, well, are you sure that's the case? If you're thinking it, that everybody else isn't thinking that too. And then early this week, you know, U of I Scott Irwin dropped out a 96 million corn acre projection for 2022. That'll scare you right off the top of your head.
Yeah, I mean, Scott's a lot smarter than I am, for sure. And I respect his work. I think that when you base it simply on economics of the situation, there's no doubt that there could be a huge push for corn. But the problem is we got to base it on a whole lot more, from my seat anyway, than economics, because it's not only input costs that are concerning. Yes, if you use today's input costs with today's prices, you can still make money. Part of the problem is the input availability, you know, and making the assumption that your spring weather pattern is going to be a really good one, first of all. And second of all, obviously, there's a lot of competition from other crops. And so, you know, does a person want to sink $800 to $1,000 into a corn crop, or do they want to do $300 less than that, you know, in a soybean crop and not have quite as much risk on the table? Now, of course, I'm talking about, you know, a producer that's paying cash rent probably with those situations. But regardless, it's not going to be uncommon to find people putting over $1,000 an acre, you know, into all their costs on a corn crop. And some of them will be even a fair amount more than that. So, you know, if you want to ask the acreage situation, I would definitely take the unders on 96. I think that Scott's article, I read the whole thing, is extremely well written and well thought out. It's just that I don't agree with it on this particular year. I would probably be willing to bet that, you know, we'll be below 92, let alone 96.
Still, on the flip side, you want to make sure you're covered at least partially for next year's crop.
Absolutely. So if I'm putting, you know, right now it's taken, you know, a pretty good amount of sales just to be able to, I guess, cover those costs. Now, we're actually around 20%, you know, and could we be more than that? And I'd be okay with it. I've said all along, I'd be willing to get up to, oh, I don't know, maybe a third sold on corn. We're 50% on soybeans. I think that it makes sense. It's pretty hard for me not, you know, to do something like that. But right now, I've got it for an average producer. Happen to sell around 52 bushels just to pay, you know, for their N, P, and K. And so obviously that's more. I mean, that's running around 20 bushel more than what it was just a year ago. You know, and so it's an interesting dynamic there. But the thing is that I want to be able to cover, you know, at least a good chunk of my input costs, considering those input costs are inflated. Now, you know, you could say that they can go on up more. I totally agree with that. But what I'm wanting to try to avoid is a black swan event to where I've got inflated input costs purchased and I don't have inflated corn prices sold. You got to be really careful there. So you know, I want to get at least 20% sold, which for a lot of us can be 40, 50 bushel. That's going to cover some of those variable costs that I think that we got to be careful not to get covered.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Up next, we'll talk with Alan Parrish. He's the Research and Education Center Director for the Department of Crop Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and across the whole of the state, and responsible in part for collecting the variety trial data for both corn and soybeans, along with wheat. You can find those results for the 2021 crop season online right now. Just search variety trials at illinois.edu or go to vt.cropsci.illinois.edu. I asked Alan Parrish about the variety trials.
The variety trials have been going on for many decades here at the University of Illinois and have been a reliable source for farmers and other stakeholders in the state as an unbiased source of a lot of data.
You've completed the variety trials for the 2021 season. Tell me about the data that comes from them.
So the data gets put into our variety testing website, into we pull the data into a regional kind of section, but we also break it out by each trial location. So we have corn, soybeans, we have our wheat from this summer, and then our hemp trials as well.
And farmers are able to access this online?
Yes, you can just Google our variety testing Illinois, pops right up, and you can access it all on there. We have it in several formats. One is just an easy printable PDF, and then you can also export the Excel file, which will allow you to sort the data on your own and do a little bit more, just picking and choosing as you will.
The variety trials are spread across the state. Producers can find the part with the trial that's in their region, or they can use statewide trials altogether?
Yes, so it's broken out into each region, and then each region has about three locations.
What kind of information is included in the trial for, say, corn?
So you'll find we have an early RM trial, which is kind of some earlier maturing corn groups, kind of break those out, then the fuller seasons for that region. We have lodging notes, moisture. We also have some of the, you know, multi-year information if the hybrids have been in it several times. So it's kind of just some nice collected information that most growers are looking for.
And when the producers are looking at them, oftentimes they're looking for particular numbers or just how a company is doing. Is all of that information there?
Yes. So we have the data sorted by each company, but again, since it's on, can be exported as Excel, you can do some of that on your own. And of course, if you don't see a company in there, by all means, tell your seed reps to get their data and varieties into our trial system.
Yeah, that's one of the issues that has long plagued, I think, the variety trials here at Illinois, is that companies don't put everything that they have into the trials.
Yes, and there are other trial companies, and so, I mean, you know, each company is doing their own trial system. There's some other third-party groups doing trial system, and you know, really, when you look at all of them, none of them are all providing the exact same data. It seems like each one has, you know, of course, yield in there, moisture, but each one kind of provides some extra information. You know, we have some lodging information there. Our Illinois Soybean Association helps pay for some composition analysis, which is really helpful for the soybean growers. We have a lot more conventional varieties in there as well. So by all means, check out all the data, but be sure to check out ours too and just see how everything's comparing. Because, you know, some trials you may have a weather event that knocks out a location close to you, but we may have it, or someone else might as well.
In the soybeans, you mean conventional varieties, non-GMO traded varieties or public varieties or both?
Actually, we do have some older public varieties in there, which are kind of fun to see, and the soybeans, just to see some of that genetic gain that's happened over the years. You know, you got Williams 82, Dwight and Jax, which are in there. But yes, they're the non-GMO varieties.
How do you think farmers should use this kind of information?
To me, it's you know, I know yield's a big part of what everybody's growing. And so sorting that information, looking at yield, looking at the moistures, looking at some of the other agronomic information that we have in there, that'll kind of help you determine on what crops to grow and select based off of, you know, the maturity groups you're looking for.
How can producers who probably want to use this data have an impact on potentially how the data is configured going forward?
One way, of course, if many growers are asking their seed reps for certain data, you know, that always get funneled up the chain and can come to us and help make those improvements. By all means, if you see us at an event or see some from the U of I, you know, mention it to them and mention it to our extension folks. The ag industry is very small, and so the more, you know, the people mention it, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So by all means, I don't have a problem with anybody contacting us or emailing us directly to ask about it and what our thoughts are on those activities, so we can provide our stakeholders with good information.
Is there information, for instance, on soybean cyst nematode resistance in the data and disease resistance for developing or new diseases within corn hybrids in the data as well?
So not currently, but if it's something that, we hear a lot of information that people want that information, we can always work with some of our other researchers here on campus and, you know, just simply figure out a way to get that information out there for growers. You know, if it's, at one location, it's better than no locations right now. So we can always try to figure out ways to make those things happen.
That was Alan Parrish. He's the director of the Research and Education Centers. Those are the research farms across the state of Illinois for the Department of Crop Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. If you'd like to see some of the research data, you can easily find it. Just search for Variety Trials, Illinois.edu, or you can visit the website directly at VT for Variety Trials, vt.cropsci.illinois.edu. CropSci, all one word, CropSci. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm Weather. Thanks, Mike, for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd. Thanks for having me. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving last week.
Oh, I had a fantastic Thanksgiving. I hope you did, too. South America, I want to hear what your assessment of the growing season for corn and soybeans in Brazil is, what you think wheat in Argentina looks like.
Well, in Brazil, it's too wet in the northern areas and too dry in the southern areas. We collect proprietary data here, and we looked at Mato Grosso, which is the number one producing soybean state in Brazil and in the world, and they had their wettest November in more than 42 years. And it's going to stay wet as we move forward with a lot of rain in the forecast. So we're looking at one of the wetter periods that we've seen in a long time in Mato Grosso. And this is exactly the opposite of what was going on a year ago when everyone was unusually dry. It's the same story next door in Goiás, which is a state to the immediate east, where they've been unusually wet, but not by quite as large of a magnitude as Mato Grosso, but still one of the wettest Novembers on record, with just about 10 inches of rain last month. And they're going to stay pretty wet too. It's interesting though, as you move on to the south, because the opposite story is happening there. In Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul, which accounts for about 35 to 40% of Brazil's soybeans, they had a nice and wet October, but then it stopped raining in November. So while it wasn't the driest on record or anything like that, it certainly was one of the drier Novembers they've had. And rains don't look all that promising going forward. That's primarily because high pressure is located right off the shore in the Atlantic Ocean. And it's more than likely being driven by the La Nina condition we have in the Pacific, which is where the water temperatures are a little bit cool, and that helps this high to form in that area. So until this setup breaks down, it's pretty much going to be the same story, we think, for the next couple of weeks, where the wet areas stay wet and the drier areas stay pretty dry.
Here in the United States, the hard red winter wheat crop should be going into dormancy. Tell me about it.
Well, it's been real dry in Oklahoma and Texas. The last 90 to 100 days have not seen very much rain, and there's scattered areas of 180-day drought that extend from Nebraska through Kansas into Oklahoma and Texas. And that's the heart of your hard red winter wheat belt. So they're in a drought at the moment, and there's not very much rain or snow on the way. It will get stormier across the central U.S. next week and into mid-December, but most to all of those systems will more than likely bypass the plains because humidities will be too low. So we think that the wheat belt is going to stay pretty dry all the way into the middle of the month. And keep in mind, Todd, that rains and snows are typically pretty light in this region throughout the winter. And December 1st, yesterday, was the first day of meteorological winter. And so to get out of a dry situation in the winter is pretty unlikely, but all it takes is one or two big systems, and we've seen those before, and suddenly things dramatically improve. But at the moment, there's nothing on the horizon that would change things markedly.
And throughout the Corn Belt, farmers will be wrapping up fall tillage, maybe some application of anhydrous ammonium, and others will be raking leaves if they're finishing that up, and maybe hanging some outside Christmas decorations. What kind of conditions do you see? Today's really nice out, in fact, here.
Well, today is fantastic, and everyone to the west of the Mississippi River is going to be having some pretty nice weather. At least it will be fairly dry going forward, with most of the rains and snows that are coming up missing those areas to the north and east. Once you're to the east of the Mississippi River, and we've kind of would put Interstate 57 as the dividing line between the drier weather and the wetter weather, once you're east of Interstate 57, especially into Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, that's where things are going to get pretty stormy next week, with several decent rounds of rain, some snow here and there. And so it will be turning a lot wetter in that region as we move through next week. Once we get to the north of that area into Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, they're going to start turning snowier this weekend and next week too. So the pattern is going to start turning a lot more active, but it's only going to be active for specific regions and generally to the north and to the east of Illinois.
And finally, you have been concerned about quality of wheat coming out of Australia. That looks like it did come to fruition. What do you see there?
It's kind of the same story going forward. It's not going to be quite as cool as it was over the course of the growing season. So temperatures have warmed up a little bit and are a little bit closer to normal. But the other thing that happened is that with this cool weather that was in place last month and throughout parts of October, it's unleashed a pretty significant series of weather events. And we saw a lot of rain in New South Wales and Queensland. That's about one third of the wheat crop in Australia. And they've seen a lot of rain over the last couple of weeks. And they're going to see a lot more rain over the next couple of weeks, with a major system moving through from Monday through Friday coming up. So pretty much that wheat crop is trying to be harvested, and it's going to stay pretty wet going forward. For the rest of the wheat crop, though, and that's the other two-thirds, let's say, they're not going to be looking all that bad. Pretty dry going forward, areas of high pressure. So it's pretty much a story where the wet areas are going to stay wet, and the drier areas to the west are going to improve as we move into the middle of the month.
Thank you so much. You have a good week. We'll talk with you next Thursday.
Yeah, that sounds great. See you later, Todd.
That is Mike Tenuri. He's with T-Storm Weather. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.